The first thing to say is I sort of come away, I'm very optimistic from my trip. I think there is a real determination in the administration to try and meet the December 2009 deadline for an agreement in Copenhagen. And I think that is incredibly encouraging. And there were people who said before the either the election of President Obama or before his inauguration, that they would have too many other things on their to-do list to be able to do this. But actually, I think there's a real sense that actually they're determined to try and meet this deadline and try and be as ambitious as possible. I think that's incredibly welcome, and I think there is a real sense of optimism that that has created, not just around in Washington, but obviously in Europe and elsewhere. I think the second thing I would say is that in the year that we are in particular, the message towards Copenhagen and out of Copenhagen must be a message of prosperity, not austerity. And that's not just true for the UK and the US, it's true for China and it's true for, elsewhere. And that is really why the summit on Friday is important, because every country now needs to be planning the shift to the low carbon economy. And I've learned a lot in my trip here about the themes and the areas that are important. We're going to be talking to business people and others in London, experts, trade unions, others, about the key areas for the UK, and also the key areas where we need to make the investments and where we need government action, or where we need government and business to work together. And I think those areas are clear. There are sort of four areas that matter, really. Energy efficiency, where actually kind of every business should be enabled to move towards energy efficiency, because it's good for them and it's good for carbon emissions. Secondly, preparing the low carbon infrastructure that we need. That's what's referred to as the smart grid, or the smart grid, which is going to be necessary for the world that we will be planning for, which is a world of renewables, a world of electric vehicles, where you need a much more upgraded grid. Thirdly, we need to move towards a sort of trinity of low carbon fuels, which I think are renewables, clean fossil fuels, and nuclear. And we'll be talking about what we need to do for that. Not just sort of what government needs to do, but how that can be of benefit to the UK. And fourthly, we need to talk about, in particularly around the area we face in terms of the issues we face around the credit crunch, how can we ensure that in the UK we not only generate the renewable power, for example, but also help produce it. That's true not just in that area, but in terms of carbon capture and storage, which can be a big area of advance for us, and not across the board. So the purpose of the summit on Friday is to think, well, okay, we know the world is shifting to low carbon. We know this needs to be part of the economy of the future. How can Britain benefit from that? Low carbon is happening around the world, and I was saying this to our American friends here. If you think about the Masdar city that is being built in the United Arab Emirates, $15 billion being invested in a city, I think, of 50,000 people, $300,000 a piece. That is a sign of a recognition in the Gulf states that the low carbon economy is coming. There's a low carbon race, and the UK and the US need to be part of that.
Where do you think you can learn from Obama's plan?
Look, I think that their recognition about the smart grid and the need to upgrade the grid system, we're going to be coming out with a vision of how we want to see the smart grid develop in the UK in the coming weeks. That's one example where I think we can learn from the US. Carbon capture and storage, we had very productive discussions with Stephen Chu, and this is a point I would make, that there's partly a competitive element to this, but there's also a cooperative element. One of the things that we've talked about with Stephen Chu, and we'll be hosting a meeting later on this year in the UK about this, is how can we coordinate our experience in carbon capture and storage so that we test the range of technologies between us, between Europe, the US, Australia, other countries, so that we move that forward. I mean, one of the things that is apparent is that coal will remain part of the energy mix, certainly in this country, for some years to come, but it needs to be clean coal, and that's why carbon capture and storage is so important.
Lord Stern in his report said that this could be this economic crisis and the climate change here, you have an opportunity to kill many birds with one stone. So what's that process like? Because it seems to me that for Britain at least, it's been a struggle rather than working together on that.
I don't really agree with that. If you think about the plans that we're taking forward in Britain around nuclear, around renewables, where we've made huge, where we're making strides on relation to connection to the grid, in relation to the support we give to renewables, we've got a new support for renewables coming in this year through the banding of the renewables obligation. If you think of what we're doing in the planning system, all of that is designed to facilitate the development of renewables. And in addition, we are recapitalizing the banks and as I said earlier, trying to make funds available, including for the renewable sector. But we continue to look at what more needs to be done. And as I've said before, one of the points of Friday is to listen to what people in the sector are saying about how we take things forward. But I'm confident that Britain can lead in this green economy, and it can be very much part of our recovery.
Do you think there should be a floor price for carbon?
I personally don't think that. It's something we obviously continue to listen to people's views on. I think if you think about what's happened, and this is a subject of discussion in the United States when I've been here, about the EU emissions trading scheme. In the first phase of the EU emissions trading scheme, there was excessive allowances given out because of the we didn't have the baseline data about emissions. In the second phase, the price has fallen to, eight euros a tonne or so. But that is in the midst of this global financial crisis. And I think if we were sitting here at 34 or 40 euros a tonne, people might be saying, look, despite the pressures on competitiveness, we have a carbon price at that level. I understand that business needs to plan ahead, and that part of that is a carbon price. But I think by making the right decisions in the next phase of the EU ETS and getting ourselves out of recession, then we will have a carbon price that can facilitate that investment. But as Stern and others have pointed out, it's not just about the carbon price. It's also about the investments we make in carbon capture and storage and in other technologies. And that's also got to be part of our strategy.
Public is viewing the idea of the greening of the economy. Just your sense in the sort of nearly 6 months, well, that you've been in this post and the corresponds, economic recession.
If you think about the people in my constituency, top of mind is not the environment at the moment. Top of mind is the economic situation. And I think one needs to be conscious of that. That's why I say it's so important that the message towards and beyond Copenhagen is one of prosperity and greater prosperity, not an austerity message. And that's why the greening of the recovery is important. That's why the greening of the economy is important. And that's clearly the case. And I think the other thing is that we have to argue with the idea that you've got a choice between your environmental goals and your economic goals, because all the evidence from Stern and elsewhere is the longer you leave it, the worse the problem gets and the more expensive it gets, and the costs of not acting are greater than the costs of acting. Secondly, we can find ways in which we both create jobs and tackle the environmental crisis that we face. And thirdly, for families, energy efficiency, and I emphasise this in my discussions on Capitol Hill, energy efficiency is an incredibly important piece of this jigsaw, because it can make your environmental commitments fairer, because people pay less than they otherwise would for their energy bills as a result of the energy efficiency measures. And it saves carbon and it creates jobs. So I think the push on energy efficiency, and we have just unveiled very ambitious plans in the UK around household energy efficiency. I think that push on energy efficiency, which President Obama is also doing, it seems to me to be incredibly important.
I mean, do you expect that there would be something sort of like a formal arrangement or an informal sort of partnership set up between the, that those building blocks need to be in place between the US and China, maybe India to a lesser degree?
This is one of these issues where it's sort of, all hands on deck in a sense. So, everyone must sort of play their part in this. And so if the US can facilitate a dialogue with China, which can help open up some of the space for a deal, then absolutely that's great. If we can play a role, that's really important. My sense is the Chinese actually are quite committed to finding a way through this and to being part of a global deal. And look, I think this is a really important point about the change that President Obama creates, which is that nobody really wants to be the country that wrecks this global deal. And I think that is an incredibly important thing to remember, because US momentum that drives towards a deal can be incredibly powerful, and particularly if it's joined by Europe, and it's important that Europe sticks to its commitments, which is a 20% unilateral commitment to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 2020 on 1990 levels, and 30% as part of a global deal. And I think that can drive us, despite the challenges and despite the difficulties, towards a global deal. And in a way, look, I think it's the other important point to make, because we've had Lord Stern here, is, you know, people, this global deal sounds incredibly dry. It's not dry. It is you know, about averting dangerous climate change. And if we don't do this, Nick Stern was saying that some of the forecasts say that we'll have a 9 degrees Fahrenheit increase in temperature over the next 100 years, which is the hottest temperature we've had for 30 to 50 million years on the planet. So, you know, global deals sound like dry things. This is actually incredibly imperative that we make this deal and get this and get a framework within which countries can work. And I'm convinced that a combination of developed and developing countries can do that.